At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I thought I saw a girl brought to life. She was warm, she came around, and she was dignified. She showed me what it was to cry. Well, you couldn't be that girl I adored. You don't seem to know, seem to care what your heart is for. But I don't know her anymore. There's nothing where she used to lie. The conversation has run dry. That's what's going on. Nothing's fine, I'm torn. I'm all out of faith. This is how I feel.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes toward the top of the hour. Sid Fernando joining us, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And this tremendous cover, James T.W., with a cover of Torn that everybody loves. James T.W., who's like 18 or 19, another British star in the making. And of course, this is the show that introduced Adele to America. That's right, Adele heard first on these airwaves before any radio station found her. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah,
and I guess things worked out great because we ran a little late. Frank, we had an extended visit with Frank Miramati, and then Pete kind of moved Pete up till 10, and you were busy anyway, so it worked out fine.
Yeah, no, that was great. Thank you.
You know, we don't exactly have glaring pedigree conversation to dive into. Owen Dale, I did bring up yesterday with Brad Cox, and he actually was talking about trying to poach big, grade one game along the way here for him, given the fact that he's an into mischief and what that what that could mean for him as a stallion. But I wanted to throw you a different pitch, which is on the Broodmare side, because today in TDN, they had the they always have the sire lists, sometimes regional and second crop, third crop, blah blah, freshman sires. This today it was leading broodmare sires, and I thought to ask you about it because it doesn't seem like it's discussed nearly enough. When we go through sales, we certainly reference so and so being out of an AP Indy mare, and there's certain there's certain mare names when you hear this terminology, a Lorded War mare, a Red Ransom mare. I mean, there's certain like tick mare, brood mares out there. And for you and for people that haven't even ever heard a broodmare sire discussion before, what's a primer? Give everybody kind of the the nuts and bolts about understanding broodmare sire influence and where it figures in pedigree discussions.
Well, good. That's a really good topic. You talk about say AP Indy mare is an iconic name. So here's how this kind of stuff works in general. If you have a big racehorse that went to stud, say Secretary, for example, who's an excellent broodmare sire, what that means is that Secretary was bred to some of the best mare available, right? So automatically, with the name of Secretariat, you're going to be associated in a potential broodmare with a big pedigree behind her. So that takes care of a lot of things. It, just by sheer dint of natural process, Secretariat was always going to be bred to great mares, and so daughters of Secretariat were going to have in general, really heavy pedigrees behind them. So when the first daughters of Secretariat start going to stud, you can just make the assumption that you're carrying a lot of pedigree weight behind that mare. Now, to use another example, a horse like Tappet, who started off, under 20,000, 15,000, I believe, went to stud, was not going to get the best mares in his first few crops. So when the first daughters of Tappet go to stud, even though Tappet's now become a really good sire, top sire, you can make the assumption that, hey, you know what? These mares aren't going to have the heft of pedigree vis-a-vis a horse like Secretariat. And ultimately what it gets down to is you want family behind you when you're breeding horses. Time in, time out, it's been proven that that's one of the common factors in getting good racehorses. So a horse like Tappet, for example, made his name as a stallion without really good broodmares behind him. So that proved his prowess. For example, Hansen, one of his top runners from the first books, had five generations, I believe, going off memory, of his mare had five generations of no black type in her pedigree. She herself had been an exclaiming mare. So Tappet was able to produce this unbelievable racehorse without help behind him. So that's a factor for Tappet. However, if you were to take a mare like that, say a mare equivalent to a horse like Hansen, and now she's going to stud and she's by Tappet but doesn't have the heft or that pedigree behind it, you're going to have to discount that mare as a potential high-powered producer because of the obvious. So Tap might end up becoming even a much better sire than Secretariat was, say, but Secretariat, those Secretariat mares have that weight behind them, the pedigree. The Tappets early didn't. Now, this is a practical example. If you notice, when Tappets, the first mares by Tappets weren't producing a lot of stakes winners, he started to pick it up now, because as Tappet himself became successful as a stallion, guess what? He started to attract those big mares. So if you were to look at a horse like Tappet, you'd probably say, hey, look, take a look at the Tappets as broodmare sires after his first five crops, because now he's going to be probably a better broodmare sire than he was with those first five crops. Ultimately, it gets down to the heft behind the pedigree. If you're talking in numbers, there's always individuals that are the cases that prove your point. You know, you have that type of Hansen without any black type in five generations of the mare, but that's the exception to the rule generally, because when a stallion is breeding 100 mares or 150 mares, you don't want those mares not to have black type and good broodmare lines behind them. So I hope that explains, in a nutshell, the concept.
Absolutely. Is there any hint at what point does the hint start to become fruition that a horse that doesn't necessarily appear to be getting the kinds of crops and the kinds of runners that the whoever is standing them expected, but you also have to give them every chance to at least then prove out perhaps down the road as a broodmare sire. And I suppose the answer, I'm just sort of answering my own question without even letting you mention it, but it's kind of thinking out loud, one of these two Triple Crown winners, for instance, is going to get every chance, and if they don't strike immediately, if they get some good horses, but not necessarily as many big stake winners as you would expect, you wait, 7, 8, 10 years, and suddenly you realize, well, this is a horse that's making his contribution to the breed as a broodmare sire.
Well, that's true. In the case, well, I'll give you a practical example similar to that. Spectacular Bid started off at Claiborne, was getting the best mares possible. He didn't turn out to be a world beater of a stallion. And so then the mares start to get progressively worse. And at the end of his career, he was standing in New York for $2,000. Okay? Now, you take the mares that he Spectacular Bid mares during the first, 5, 7, 8, 10 crops, ones from Kentucky, ones that were in Claiborne. Of course, those mares have produced better than the mares that were produced from him standing at a $2,000 fee in New York. The Spectacular Bid later in his career at a $2,000 fee is not going to be the same broodmare sire as the Spectacular Bid who was at Claiborne, regardless of how he did, only because the mares drastically dropped off in quality. So if you were to tell me, hey, at that time, hey, Sid, I got a great Spectacular Bid mare as a potential broodmare prospect, and it was from those first few crops, great, Steve, that's fantastic. You say, hey, Sid, I picked up a Spectacular Bid mare, and it was a New York bred from one of his later crops. Well, I wouldn't be as gung-ho about it.
Who do you and among the breeders that you work with, I mean, who do you relish? And when the opportunities arise in bloodstock sales, you know, November's type sales, who do you relish of having, you know, having your clients add to their broodmare band in terms of broodmare sire stock? And how do you anticipate a young broodmare sire in terms of grabbing some mares cheap that before people realize what a good broodmare sire this stallion's going to become?
Well, you know, there are some lines, just as there are some lines that are noted for being sires of sires. For example, you know, Northern Dancer got stallions, and those stallions begat stallions, and it is a very strong masculine line. You have certain lines similarly that kind of vanish on the top line, that is, as a sire of sires, but become influential in the interior of a pedigree, and by that I mean at the broodmare sire, the sires of broodmares. If you go back to use an example, Prince Quillo, the broodmare sire of Secretariat, since we spoke about Secretariat, is also the broodmare sire of Never Bend. I'm sorry, Mill Reef, who won the Epsom Derby and stood in from Paul Mellon in Europe. Prince Quillo never became, he got good stallion sons, but the line never continued on the male line. However, he and his sons for a long time were able to ply their trade as sires of broodmares. They seemed to work in that position. So Prince John, for example, the son of Prince Quillo, became himself another great broodmare sire. So you have certain stallions that seem to work on the bottom side of the pedigree, even if they've kind of died off on the top side. And in Europe, for example, from this particular line of Mill Reef, Darshan, Aga Khan horse, again, a terrific broodmare sire that clicked with the Sadler's Wells line. A more recent example here is King Mambo. King Mambo in this country really had only one really good stallion son in Lemon Drop Kid. Overall, globally, he's having a massive influence as a sire of broodmares.
Right.
So there's another case. King Mambo has excellent stallion himself. He's had other sons outside of the United States succeed because of a turf environment that really suited him. King Kamiyamiya in Japan then got the current darling of Japanese racing, Lord Canaloa. King's Best in Europe, in this country, really just Love and Drop Kid. But as a broodmare sire, you see how powerful he is. And a lot of times these broodmare sires, they happen to be at the right time in history where they find suitable sire lines that they click with, and then breeders reproduce those, and many times the success. And in King Mambo's case, the Sadler's Wells line was a really good line for him to combine with. And when you're looking at potential horses, you look at emerging trends. Bernardini, for example, a son of AP Indy, again appears to be headed towards a really great career as a sire of broodmares. He's been a very, very good stallion himself. Stallion sons so far, have been kind of hit or miss. He's had a horse like Stay Thirsty that started off in Kentucky, but has been sent to California as a few other sons. Notably this past weekend, he had some great success as a broodmare sire. And so he's a horse, for example, that if you were to try to identify early an emerging broodmare talent, broodmare sire talent, off the top of my head, he's one that you'd want to look at. And you'd also know, by the way, because when he went to stud, again, there's that perfect example. His first daughters were being bred to some tremendous mares. And it's kind of why he has had more success off the bat as a broodmare sire than, say, a horse like Tappet, who's now starting to pick it up. But as he gets into his better bred mares.
I'm glad you mentioned the King Mambo, because that's a name, and LDK too. I mean, Lemon Drop Kid mares. You see certain names, and I think it's almost an osmosis thing, Sid. The more pedigree writing you read, the mm-hmm. more names that you see on a regular basis in this vein, that. Whether it's quotes from the John Gunthers of the world and the Hancocks and so forth, Farish, you see them gravitating. And you also, frankly, just like we kind of joke tongue in cheek about Jack Oxley, not wanting to pass up any Sky Maces. There's also certain breeders. I mean, if you see certain names, and this is really true in any area of the trade, mm-hmm. that are going after certain names, in adding horses to their broodmare band, that's a great way. I mean, go to Equibase, for instance, and pull up somebody you admire as a, as an owner breeder or just as a commercial breeder even, and look at who their stake winners are and their best performers, their top horses, and look at the breeding, and you'll invariably see some commonality in terms of broodmare sires.
Absolutely. Spoke about people who have an identity with certain horses, Jack Oxley, Sky Mesa, Rick Porter with Unbridled Song.
Right,
and
right.
Look at Unbridled Song as a perfect example. It was an excellent stallion. His sons haven't done much so far.
It's true.
At the end of his career, but look at him as a broodmare sire. Outstanding broodmare sire, and the same held true for Unbridled. It kind of took off after that. Now, Unbridled Song has been extremely better with his daughters reproducing than his sons. That's been a trend that was been going around for a while. And in fact, one of the reasons Mr. Fipke was so adamant about breeding his, and speaking about a broodmare sire, Lemon Drop Kid mare, Kentucky Oaks winner to Unbridled Song, was he felt that Lemon Drop Kid was a great broodmare sire and Unbridled Song would be a great broodmare sire. And so if you could get daughters by Unbridled Song out of Lemon Drop Kid mare, that would be adding to his benefit. And of course, that's the pedigree, isn't it, of his two grade one winners, Forever Unbridled and Unbridled Forever. And now they're broodmares. So he's got high-performing racehorses by Unbridled Song out of Lemon Drop Kid Mare, from a good family, an Argentine family. But these horses will now go to stud, and as daughters of Unbridled Song, with the performance they have, grade one winners, and out of a Lemon Truck Kid Bear, I mean, they're set up to be broodmares. And so that's a long-term breeder thinking right there. But you see the type of horses you would use to try to produce broodmares. And that type of thinking doesn't take place unless you're a breeder, a breeder who's breeding to race and to breed down the road.
Yeah, and on that topic, in fact, I'm doing what I just suggested, and I'm reached for Watts Humphrey, for instance, and I'm just curious. I'm kind of poking around here, and I see his biggest earner, Center Court. She's out of the AP Indy Mare Let. Another one of his big ones is out of a Belong to Me Mare. And actually, that's also there's a name that you see quite often, and yet is unheralded.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, one of our, it is true. It's, he's Belong to Me, went to stud at Quest Royal Farm in New York. So his first few crops, the mares weren't of great quality until he then came to Lane's End, where he was betting much better mares. And he's been able to... through the years, a punch above his weight, both as a sire, actually, and as a broodmare sire. So, and he's also kind of a general rule, not hard, but generally, you tend to find better broodmare sires that were kind of staying type of horses, and he was a sprinter. So that's another interesting angle with him. But of course, that's certainly not a hard rule. The stallion in Europe, Pivotal, who is not a great sire of sires, but is a tremendous sire of broodmares, is another example of a horse making an impact in the interior part of a pedigree. He was also a fast horse. But he does sire horses across the range of distances.
As I'm listening too, I'm still going through Watts Humphrey, and I'm gonna, as much as I talk about him, and we had that wonderful visit with him last year. And in fact, I'm putting together best ofs for next week while we're on vacation, and I'm gonna pull that show back out. From Christmas, which was the breeder show, where you heard from Watts Humphrey and from John Gunther, and trying to think of who else was in that show, probably Bo Lane. But as I go through here, Sid, it's a real testament to Watts Humphrey's savvy and success, because I haven't seen one repeat broodmare sire among his best runners. AP Indy, Belong to Me, the broodmare sire of Frivolous, Mr. Greeley, the broodmare sire of Morticia, Giant's Causeway, the broodmare sire of Romantic Vision. It's clear that he's not relying on some pat formula. He's pairing mares that he's added to the broodmare band with the right stallions.
Yeah, and usually when you have a pattern of a certain broodmare sire kind of used repeatedly, Steve, that's usually, as I mentioned, an older paradigm where a stud farm stood a stallion, then got another stallion and used the daughters of that stallion to the new stallion. And you tend to find more stuff like that in this country from years ago, or in other countries as well, where, for example, in Brazil, at a very famous stud farm called Fazenda Mondesir, they stood a stallion called Waldmeister, became a great broodmare sire too. And then when Fazenda Montesir got a new horse, Gadir, son of Lee Fard, they started bringing all their Wallmeister mares to Gadir. So now this farm has all these mares by Gadir out of Wallmeister mares. And so, you know, you can all, in the old days, same with, you know, Claiborne, that stood Nash Ruler and Prince Quillo and Bold Ruler. So you ended up having Prince Quillo mares go to Nash Ruler. Then you had Prince Quillo mares go to Nash Ruler, son Bold Ruler. And a farm like that and their clients became associated with, you know, Prince Quillo as a broodmare sire. Individual breeders that aren't standing stallions, and a case in point, Watts Humphrey, he may have various different broodmare sires represented in his band.
You know, I thought to shift gears to look at Live Oak and Mrs. Weber, and of course, you know, among her most successful, you know, she has the unique aspect of having had win approval, the with approval mare that has been so successful and produced four of her top six horses in earnings all time. I mean, that you know, having a fountainhead mare, you know, it's funny, Sid, and you can appreciate this, and I'm sure working with Chuck Fipke and the like, you know, Mrs. Weber had My Typhoon, who, of course, you know, comes from one of the greatest female families in the stud book, and being a daughter of Urban C. And yet it was this Florida bred mare that has been so outrageously successful. And she basically did it with rather common Florida stallions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how stuff like that works out. And that's so true. I mean, you find example after example of the lesser horse, or the you know, the lesser sibling, or the lesser priced broodmare becoming the bigger one. You know, that's what makes us so fascinating, really.
Well, and you also get the, you know, of course, Mrs. Weber generally runs everything that, you know, that she's producing, and then also augments with some purchases. But you juxtapose her list of top horses versus Watts Humphrey, and of course Humphrey only campaigns his fillies because he sells the boys, and so they don't show up.
Right.
They don't show up in his on track record, and
yeah,
eight of his top earners are all time are fillies, logically fillies and mares, and for Charlotte, eight of her 10 are horses or geldings. She's only got two earners that are on the list. My Typhoon and In the Gold are the two that in her top 10. The rest are males. So it kind of gives you a feel for the direction of and the goals of operations. And when it comes to, you know, big, some of the best breeders, really. And Humphrey's fascinating because he's a hybrid. He's part commercial and part breed to race.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Each breeder has a unique story behind him or her, and what I've always found, and I like to look at the history behind the breeder too, and you know, you end up you know, finding clues, you know. It's just like the best way to explain it is they say that, you know, every criminal goes back to the scene of the crime and leaves you know, leaves a thumbprint or something. And that's very true with breeders. You know, you can always see something or another. The horse that Mrs. Whitney had recently, stakes winner. When you go back and you look at the pedigree, you see that that particular line, and Francis Caron had tweeted about this, encompassed 11 generations of Whitney ownership. And then there was a break where the family had been sold, and she went back and found that family again, got into it, and
right.
now had success, you know. So
right.
she went back to that. You know, you can you find clues sometimes in what guys are doing, what women are doing, with breeders, the thought process behind it, and so it's always that's always a really interesting. If you look at the success Peter Brandt's having, for example, Brandt, when he started coming back, of course he made his big splash buying all the or a lot of the Wildenstein horses that were being dispersed. If you go back in his history and you look at some big time successes, Awaya was one of his first, but among his most famous racehorses. And that was a filly that had been purchased by Daniel Wildenstein. And then you look further and you notice that, of course, the Wildensteins are New York City art dealers. Peter Brandt is in the New York City art world. They were friends. And he had put a lot of stock in their common interest together, and he recently won the Prix du Jockey Club, the French Derby, and I believe that colt, if I'm not mistaken, goes back to the Wildenstein horses, including, I have to double check, if you have the pedigree up, you can look real quickly. The horse's name was Sotsis, named after the designer, Ettore Sotsis, S-O-T-T-S-A-S-S, the French Derby winner. Of course, you know, I'll leave it to Brandt to name a horse after a iconic designer, too. Architect and designer.
S-O-T-T.
S-A-S-S.
S-A-S-S. There we go. Okay. Sotsis.
Okay. And what is the third
there
one?
There we go. The... Starlet's sister, the Galileo mare out of Premier Creation, who was by Green Tune, Al Wacky, a Miss Wacky mare, was the third dam, and Alloy, the fourth dam.
It must have been one of his other ones recently. He's had quite a few, but one of them I noticed was also out of a line from the Wildenstein family. So I'd have to go back and look up which one it was. But you know, again, he's going back to the scene, quote unquote, of the crime. So you can get an idea of how guys operate sometimes when you start to delve into the pedigree, because the pedigree of the horse and the pedigrees of the people cross-pollinate.
This is actually, you had me pull this up, and it's a fascinating page, actually, Sotsis. Just looking at, including the presence of Pivotal as the sire of Sayuni. And
yeah.
You've got, you know, Polar Falcon and Danehill in here, Conquistador Cielo. This thing has got it all. I mean, there's about a million different things happening in here. What an interesting combination.
Yeah, that's the brother to his sister Charlie.
There you go. That's right. That's right. Oh, look at that. Okay. Too funny. Yes.
Yeah.
Starlet's sister.
That's why he went back to buy this one, by the way. Another example of going back to the scene of the crime, you know.
How about that? And wow. What about the family in here, too, Sid? You look at that Starlet's sister, bred by Bill Preston.
Yeah.
The old Prestonwood farm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize she was bred in Ireland, though. That's interesting. Was he the Preston that just, which is the one that just died?
The brothers were Art and maybe Savon Preston was
Art.
Oh,
Bill.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the horses that I was thinking about, not to change the subject, that was a Wildenstein horse of Brandt's is Raging Bull, the Grade One winner.
Sure.
Bred by Dayton Investments Limited. That's, of course, Wildenstein.
It was Art. It was Art Preston that passed.
Yeah.
Boy, it's over a year. Oh my gosh, it's March of last year now. No, that doesn't. I didn't even seem that long ago. Wow, here's a picture of Flat Out with him leading Flat Out into the Gold Cup Jockey Club Gold Cup winner's circle with Scooter Dickey right next door to him. That's so great. The great Scoot. Sid, obviously, you know, you and I it's the rabbit hole. I knew the minute I saw that list this morning, the leading broodmare sires. I said, you know, we have not brought up broodmares with Sid and in a while, so let's go in that direction. One thing also I thought about asking you about was any final takeaways from Royal Ascot as well that you might add.
I thought one of the big takeaways that I did tweet about was, you might have seen my tweets on this, that you know, the last couple of years, Wesley Ward hasn't had the success he's had in prior years, which, A, makes you appreciate what he has done in the past that much more. But also, interestingly, in the last 2 years, and I've spoken to him about it, where he changed his whole methodology by breaking and training his horses in Kentucky over the winter, fall and winter, instead of Florida. And so his Kentucky experiment, where he's able to, he leases a farm from Kelly, Mr. Kelly of Calumet, across from Keeneland, and he trains over that Keeneland track, and then he races also in the winter at Turfway Park, all weather. Whether that model has maybe had an effect on his success at Royal Ascot, because earlier he was training these horses in the sunshine of Florida on dirt tracks. And although, you know, part of the reason that he switched, I think, was also because of the possibility of injury or minor issues that might occur on dirt early with two-year-olds. I think what he gave away, perhaps, was this is all speculation on my part, but perhaps what he gave away was some Florida sunshine that gives you that early edge, you know. And whatever it is, he certainly, last couple of years, hasn't been able to reproduce what he did earlier. And it's just pure speculation on my part, but perhaps, you know, perhaps that was a factor, and that was one takeaway for me.
Well, I did mention one of the things that I've said last couple of days, that as we get further from Tepin's exploits, you realize how monumental her accomplishment was, too.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, there was a tweet that I kind of two tweets I juxtaposed, one from Pat Cummings, a big internationalist, who said, yeah, the America has arrived and there's, the gap is narrowed and Americans can go there and do this. And Andy Serling, very, very, no mince words about it. Tepin's an outlier and it's very difficult to do, you know. And this, this year anyway, Andy won that battle.
Yeah, well, because, you know, and Andy, you know, Andy tries to remind owners, and he's got the interests of the association at heart. You know, he's trying to of NYRA. He's trying to tell people, you know, these fanciful ideas of going over there and competing. It you know, if you have a Tepin was the perfect, absolute perfect test tube baby. I mean, she had done everything you would have wanted her to do domestically. Well, let's go, you know, chase a different kind of achievement. And so it did make a lot of sense. But, you know, when people were clamoring late last year, oh, newspaper of records got to go over to ask it. She's going to be, she'll kill over there. It's like, shut up. Just stop.
Yeah.
With this insanity. I mean, let them get what they need to get done here. I mean, I understand what Wesley's doing, you know, where
he was held as the exception by Andy. In fairness to Andy, as Andy said, Wesley aside, everybody else, we, you know, need to rethink this.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, if you've got, you know, if you've hung all the blue ribbons on the wall that you can, you know, you want here domestically. Okay. You can go over, you know, bound for nowhere. Okay. Why not? That's fine. I mean, to interrupt your season to go get your, you know, to go finish, even if you run well and finish fourth and fifth and some sort of Pyrrhic victory, I when you could have won a $300,000 grade two back home. Yeah. I mean, what are you doing? Come on.
Well, you know, exactly. In Wesley's case, he targets that. He's a meticulous horseman. With that particular target in mind, he has the clientele behind him for that. But as Andy Serling pointed out, Wesley aside, you know, the regular guy, you know, they went over there. Orsino's horse ran, what, fifth or sixth, and there was elation in the stands and on social media that, oh, wow, he ran sixth or whatever. Well, you know, there wouldn't be elation if he ran, you know, sixth anywhere else.
Exactly.
It's like the Japanese being elated that their horse ran seventh and fifth here, and, you know, this lady, Kate Hunter, making a case that was one of, you know, how great was, you know, all right, well, you know, it was nice of you to come over and take a spot away from an American and run seventh. Okay, but get out of here. You know?
That was pretty good. Well, Sid, we're taking the week off next week, and then we'll come back. We'll be ready for the July sale. You're going to walk right into the yearling market when we talk in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the conversations I was on earlier with a client about the July sale. So you're absolutely right. We're, you know, work starts up hard for us now with the yearling sales. And we got a little break here between the 2-year-olds and the yearlings, but it's going to heat up again.
Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale Weekly, and you can work with work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. Connect with Sid. The yearling season is just days really away. You'll be looking at your yearlings at the Newton paddocks shortly for the Phasic sale, and gets things going towards Saratoga. both the Open and the New York market. And next thing you know, we'll be talking about Keeneland for 2 weeks in September.
Oh, boy.
I know, right? Well, we'll start to get geared up for, you know, for the first crop stallions, and we'll discuss all of that. But get connect ahead of this with Sid, 510-490-1111. I appreciate it, Sid, as always.
Thanks. Thank you, Steve. We'll talk again next week. Week after.
2 weeks. There you go.
Okay.
Let's take a bottom of the hour break. 2.5 hours in. Seth Merrow is going to join us next. And, of course, yesterday, Mike Beer went through the pick six sequence. Going to get Seth's opinions next. We do have a key scratch that really hurts my approach. I this drives me crazy. But in the seventh race, that horse I talked about at length earlier this morning, Silencia. Yeah. Yep. Didn't come up from Maryland, the Harry Landry. I don't know. I'm a little confused as to how to restructure the ticket. So I'll have to do that after we get off the air. But let's get some opinions from Seth Merrow. Take our last break probably of the morning and give you the rest of the changes. Doesn't look like there's anything else major. Only, I think, one other live scratch came out of the eighth race. Otherwise, it's just the MTOs. So there you go. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Summer is one of the best times for serious horse players to bet their races. Saratoga and Del Mar are in full swing, along with other top tracks like Gulfstream and Laurel, and ExpressBet puts them all at your fingertips. Plus, ExpressBet customers can play in exclusive tournaments and promotions this summer, and new customers can earn a $500 sign-up bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-5.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
And Seth Merrow standing by. And even just heralding Seth's visit, making me laugh because Yesterday, Seth went over the pick six at Belmont with Mike Beer, and I told him, oh, Mike, you know, when are you coming up to Saratoga? I heard he was spending the whole meet, and he confirmed that. I said, oh, we'll have to have you on, you know, on Loose on the Lead. I said, because nothing's more fun than Loose on the Lead during the summer and making fun of Seth, which is, you know, really the whole purpose of the show.
That's why you come back year after year. I was at the Harness Track, I don't know, a month or two ago. I was walking through the upstairs, and some woman said to me, hey, I watched you on TV this morning. I thought, thanks, I always appreciate that. She said, was that Ty from the Bagel Ties? I said, no, that was my own Ty.
Well, you should look forward to opening day, because there's going to be a whole new supply.
Well, clearly the audience loves it, the Bagel Ties. That's why they replenish my tie supply.
For those that have not been around long enough to appreciate the Sacco Ties, this goes back to when Seth and I had Loose on the Lead was year round, and then Seth got tired of me being on the road and him sitting alone in the studio week after week. But I used to bring him a Christmas gift of a Sacco Ties, which are ties that I've retired from my own rotation. But you know, much like NBC said years ago, if you didn't see it the first time, it's new to you. So. It's become one of the great gags of regional television history. In fact, I'm surprised we haven't gotten a regional Emmy.
The ties. I must admit, yours are more stylish than my own selections. I pretty much stick with the solid color, maybe a little kind of conservative stripe, but you've taken me to a whole new area that has been noticed by the audience. They remark on that, too. I like the tie today, and then I have to admit, well, it's really mine, but thank you.
Well, you talk about the colors and the patterns, but because, of course, you know, Seth, if left to his own devices, all of his shirts, ties, and jackets are all basically the color of meatloaf. And so it all kind of blends together, and it's kind of monochromatic.
Well, I go for the traditional. I'm with a light blue shirt, and typically, I do a lot of blue coats, too. But not all. I broke through a few years ago.
All right, we're going to hit something enormous, and we're taking you we're going to take you out to a quality men's clothier, and we're going to reboot you. It's going to be a reintroduction, the new set.
Speaking of style and whatnot, I went for a haircut yesterday, heading to Woodbine on the weekend, so I thought I'd get the haircut done. And she says, scissors or clippers? And I said, it doesn't make any difference. She said, well, of course it does. It's your hair. And I said, it really doesn't. And then I had to tell her, the last haircut I went to, I walked into the barber shop, and as I sat down, the guy said, what number? I said, there's never been math on the quiz before. I guess that's a thing now. But again, I'm so fashion, the haircut, I guess now you go in and you have a number for the quarter and the length of the hair or something. I was unaware that haircuts involve math now.
Well, let's also be honest, Seth. That number is going to turn into a fraction pretty soon.
That is a good line. I'm going to use that to tell the guy. Well, that's why I said, when the woman said yesterday, clippers or scissors, I said, it doesn't make a difference. She said, yes, it does. You're here. I said to her, well, look, she goes, God, it's not going to make a difference.
Yeah, it's a decimal now.
That is what I'll do. What he says, what number, I'll say 0.3.
3/4. That's pretty good. And if you go into Toronto and did it, you'd have to give it to him in the metric system. You'd have to
That's
come
right.
up with
centimeters.
The Speaking of which, of course, we're gonna they're drawing today, right? Or usually right about now, actually.
Yeah, I think it is. So the entries are already out for Friday. I think they're drawn today for the weekend for the Queens Plate.
How exciting. And we will certainly be rooting. I mean, given the success of Phillies, we certainly wouldn't mind seeing Neil Howard win one with Desert Ride. But it's a bulky field, as always, seemingly, and haven't looked ahead to weather and so forth. But we're heading to Boston, Seth, because Friday we're going to broadcast from Suffolk for the last 2 days of racing at East Boston, sadly.
Yeah, I'm envious. I mean, obviously, we're up in Canada. Otherwise, I tried to get there a couple of weeks ago on my way to Maine, and traffic, I couldn't make it over there. But I wanted to get over for one of the last weekends. And on TV the other day, I had Jessica Paquette on from Suffolk. And so we were talking some Suffolk and some history. And one of the things that I found amazing, I mean, obviously, tons of history on the racetrack, you know, Seabiscuit, Cigar. You look down the list of Mass Cap winners, Skip Away and Skip Trial and Commentator. But as I was at the night before doing a little research on the history of Suffolk Downs, I think it was 66, might have been 65, the Beatles had a concert there. According to Jessica, it was their last U.S. concert. And I found that a little bit intriguing on the history of Suffolk.
Wow, that's cool. I love it. I love that. Well, we're going to do all that kind of thing. In fact, we'll start tomorrow with some stories, and I want to work some other people in that won't be able to get to the weekend or be on hand, certainly on. And Friday, we do have to do our regular weekend preview, too, and there is lots to preview. Mother Goose in New York, obviously, and you got the Summit of Speed at Gulfstream. And it's a substantial weekend, actually, even in advance of the July 4th holiday next week. So between your coverage at Queen's Plate and everything else, should be a great weekend. Let's take a couple of minutes. We got about 15, Seth, and I do want to get your input on this, what's going to be at least a $2 million pot when it comes to this $2 pick six today at Belmont. And the one major scratch affected me substantially as that Silencia came out of the State Bred Allowance 7th, that is basically the feature. But we'll get to that in a minute. Let's start with the third, and we'll just get your opinions, and I'll add any thoughts as we go through.
Yeah, I've got a very small ticket. It's going to be a $36 ticket. I've got three singles, but I have to take a shot with a pool this big. So I am going to put together that ticket. But as I say, we'll see how it works out. I'm deeper with selections, obviously, in the races. But the first race, I'm going to go two deep. I have a 4, 6, and 7. But I'm going to use the 4 and the 6 in that third race. Applicator, the race 2 back, was claimed out of that. And got a start at this level last time. I thought it was okay. Decent little third place effort. Tascuano sticks on board. So Applicator on top for me, I'll use that one. And then Golden Spear in the mix as well. Irad Ortiz sticks on board this one. Similar scenario. Kind of a nice win. And then tried this level last time. Disappointing maybe last in the Maurice's Applicator. That one ran third. Golden Spear ran fifth. I just have a feeling Golden Spear may be a little bit better than that effort. And we'll get a rebound to a better performance this afternoon. So, again, I'm going to use the 4 and the 6 in the third race.
Well, and it's funny that you bring up the Claceris, because I did say to Mike Beer yesterday, Claceris is very dangerous to just gloss over. So I'm intrigued that you want to include him on the ticket. For me, he's a C. I ended up using the 4 and the 7 Applicator, and I actually ended up picking Harv Won't Tap. The more I looked at that Falcone horse, and we had a extensive conversation about Robert Falcone Jr., and he figures prominently in this sequence, because in the fourth race, the turf sprint, the first level allowance, and with all the crazy conditions, you know, state bred stuff and earning, you know, there's all kinds of conditions involved in the fourth. He's got his first starter for the Generazios, Discretionary Mark, and Falcone, a major part of this sequence. So interesting that. You know, what you did here. I went 4-7 as an A. I went 3-8 as B. And Mr. Maybe just scares me a little bit. And I have a I think I suggested that the pace, you know, the pace was murky here, and so I that's what I was troubled about, Mr. Maybe and how to use him. But Shalako also I like him as a horse, actually. The horse that I kind of shunted down was Mowbridge. The more I looked, and he scares me too. But anyway, I went 4-7 as an A, 3-8 as a B, 2-6 as a C. Because I mentioned yesterday that big outfits are going to buy the whole race. What'd you do in the fourth?
I'm going to single here. I went 8-7, 4-2, but again, it's a sequence. We were looking for some singles. I was. The $2 pick six, I have to admit, I don't play as much as I used to, and I didn't play a lot to begin with. But on days like this, you know, you have to take a shot. So, again, looking for a little ticket. I thought the Chad Brown Shadwell runner off of the U.S. State View down at Gulfstream, that was a pretty good near miss, was kind of logical. I have it 8-7, 4-2, and if I did have a little more juice to put in, I would put Banana Thief in on the jock switch. I think the move over to Jose Ortiz might move that one forward, and that may offer a little bit of value for the ticket. So if I could, I'd go 8-7, but with the ticket I've formulated, I'm just going to use the 8.
I didn't want to single here, but from a financial standpoint, it kind of became a necessity. I mean, that race by Mutakatif, it was okay. It certainly doesn't project him over this field and over some of the better efforts that some of the horses in here are, you know, potentially capable of or have already run. But I felt the same way, that from a financial standpoint, to keep the ticket, because there are other places that, you know, you feel like you do need to use, you know, more than two or three even. So I can understand the singling. I did the exact same thing, and now I'm particularly forced to do it because of what happened with Silencia, because I was going to absolutely single her, but now I think you got to use three in that seventh race. Okay, so the 8 as a single, I used the 1 and the 6 as a pair of C's. Third leg is a maiden claiming 50, and it has the scenario of a recently disqualified winner, and a lot of times they come right back and win. Other times it ends up being, you know, a disaster, and a horse you know, never overcomes that being taken down. I've seen it go both ways. But Crypto Gold, you know, the logical in here. What'd you approach in the fifth?
Yeah, I had to use that one. I went 10-2-8. I'll use all three of those. I thought Whiskey Is My Wine put in a pretty good debut effort. You know, showed some speed and faded late. That to me looks like they wanted to build on and improve from. Should appreciate the education now. It was behind the disqualified winner, Crypto Gold, so I'm going to include that one in the mix as well. Those two are going to bookend the horse I had in the second slot, AI Initiative, who at the race two was pretty good down at Gulfstream. The comeback to New York, maybe a little bit lacking. I just have, again, it's one of those where I just have a feeling there was maybe a troubled trip. The horse is better than that. Put that one in as well. So for me, I'm going to use all three of those, 10, 2, and 8.
Yeah, and I kind of backed off. I had some interest in AI Initiative, and then I kind of shunted him down. Ultimately here, I went 6-8 with the 6-8 and the 10. Crypto Gold on top, the 8. That spindle top I talked about, Seth, with people yesterday, and it got some reaction too. You know, that pattern that you see, that you is very visible on PPs when it comes to a horse that all of a sudden, you know, maybe in a second or third start, in this case Spindletop's third start, all of a sudden you see a couple of ones on the running line, and then in the subsequent start you see the ones stretch out, you know, even into the third call and maybe even into the stretch call on the chart, and to me that is always a forward going and a, to me, an attractive pattern, and something I'd love to trade on when I see a horse that has shown signs of having some speed, then reiterates it. Usually it points to a very big effort next time. So Spindle Top at 8-1 is prominent on my tickets, and Whiskey Is My Wine, who, you know, could wire this group under the right circumstances. So 6-8-10 are my A's, and that's it. No B's. I did throw in on a spree for people to consider, right? You know, because this is one of those kinds of races. We also, the Nightcap is, which is also, it happens to be a state bred maiden group. But when you've got horses like AI Initiative and Azadine, I don't know why Azadine, by the way, is 20-1 and AI Initiative is 3-1. Azadine is, you know, may not have as many efforts on his page that AI Initiative does that look competitive, but Azadine is not, you know, seven times less likely to succeed here than AI Initiative. But anyway, On a Spree is a new gelding and has been away since February. Why doesn't a horse like this have a license to be that much better? And, you know, you can't make an assumption about a horse like this that's, you know, dropping in for a tag, number one, and is a new gelding. This horse may absolutely get competitive in this spot against some horses that have had their share of chances.
Yeah, he was originally in my mix. I went back and forth and back and forth and dropped him out eventually, but it's the other quote-unquote Kieran horse at 12-1 on the morning line, and as you say, moves in for a tag. I just think there are a lot of reasons you can think this horse may step up and improve this afternoon.
Let's talk about those maidens. I don't think there's a lot of creativity necessary here, but what are you doing with the state bred six pack?
I originally was going to use 3, 6, 4, and 2, but the ticket was too expensive, and that's where I pared down. I actually just thought I'd stick with the Rudy horse, Justin Vision, who had the pretty good looking debut effort. Typically in these races, I like to look at some first-time starters and look up some weapons and anything off the page. I mean, they're good. You know, that you can make cases for connections and maybe a little bit of breeding, but it wasn't enough to go against those with experience. Experience counts and still just in position.
Seth, try to find a better place to stand or do something because the phone is cutting in and out here a little bit.
Okay.
We'll test where you end up in a minute. I'll just say that the more I looked at Assault Breaker, the more I was impressed. And Assault Breaker, Jonathan Thomas, you know, Street Boss is a very good win early sire and a first out sire. Even more notable, I caught wind of the name Ouchie Knight, who Tom Bush trained, and you might remember was a very good New York bred. You know, she nibbled at state bred stakes. She wasn't a stake winner, but she was multiple stake placed against New York breds, and she won her first outing at Belmont going 5.5. So I think you get, to pull out a Seth Marrow, there's some nature. Versus the nurture, and I'll take Assault Breaker, even though you're going to have to live with favoritism, and the five, all guns blazing. Maya Engelhart proving time and again how good he is getting babies ready. So the 4 and 5 for me. I threw in Joe Parker adding Lasix to Our Destiny, and I thought that one's going to get overlooked as an exotic player, you know, for third maybe. And Bull of Bayern is the Rudy that I prefer. So I went 4-5-2-1. What about the seventh here, the feature? And my approach went sideways, Seth, with the scratch of Silencia.
All right. Tell me if I'm better. And I have a 9, 10, and 11. I'll use all three of those, and I'm happy that your horse is scratched because I didn't know what to do with that horse. Kind of debated putting it in and then eventually left it out of the mix. So again, it's one of those I was happy with the scratch. But Lady put in one of those races last time that you just talked about with showing those ones on the page and just got caught late. I think could benefit from that and move forward. A little early speed also from Jaded Lady in the seasonal debut, and a little early speed also from Summer Squeeze in the last start. I don't think there's enough speed here that we're going to duel all the way around. I have a feeling one of these will kind of separate and maybe be the one to catch and the others will stalk and have a chance to pounce. So I'm going to use 9, 10, and 11 in the 7.
Well, I don't know. I went a little bit differently. A 9 and 10, absolutely, Sadie Lady and Jaded Lady. But it's a keeper, a horse that I made a case for yesterday with Mike Beer, and I'm absolutely using prominently as the value. I think I'm going to end up, and I got to make this decision as we get off the air when I make the change to the ticket, but I may actually end up picking Questec, who I also talked about as sort of an either-or with Mike yesterday. Questec, I think the way things have changed here with some scratches, it sure looks like Questec could get a very advantageous trip with Errat Ortiz. And frankly, the fact that Errat Ortiz is even riding Questec is notable to me. So I think I'm picking Questec at 8-1, and it's a keeper, and I'll probably end up going 4-5-9 in the feature. And I guess the 10 is going to have to be a C for me. I don't see how I can fit her on the ticket unless I make some other changes. But anyway, 4-5-9 at the very least as A's, which gets us to this Quagmire 8th race, Seth, and these New York-bred maiden claimers, they are a snake pit. And no matter how logical horses like a Fousey looks or Gunboat Diplomacy, you got to be scared. You don't want to end up into this nightcap live, with a couple of favorites. And frankly, that was the scenario Sunday when Greg Matisse jumped up and bit two people that were ready to spend the quarter of a million they were going to make.
And that's where I am. I singled Gunboat Diplomacy, but I agree with you completely. I call 5-3, but again, just to keep the ticket reasonable, Gunboat Diplomacy, I think, is live in here looking at the race two back last time. Again, I think the horse is better than we saw last time. But the move over to Jose Ortiz attracted my attention. I think that may move the horse up a little bit, but I'm not going to argue going in some other directions as well. As I say, I have it 6-5-3 in Youth Gone Wild. I think you make a case there. The second time started the number 3, I think, to be live in here as well. But just to keep my ticket fairly reasonable, I'm going to use just the 6 in here, Gunboat Diplomacy.
By fairly reasonable, Seth means under $40, folks. That's it.
Yes, yes.
I do tell people that Seth's got a theory when it comes to pick sixes and big carryovers, the $2 variety. I'm spending X amount. I'm not spending a lot. And if when my day comes, I'm going to go 6-for-6. And it doesn't matter if my ticket's $24. When I get lucky, that's all that matters. And I'll be the one laughing at the end.
Occasionally it plays out, so you have to take the shot that is within the budget. And as I say, I'm just not confident enough on these pick six tickets to jump in and put together the $140 ticket. If I did have a level of confidence, I think I would jump up the ticket. But in the sequence today, I think it's tough to have that level of confidence.
Let me just say, like, if this was one of the TV and when the people come outside the third wall, I turn to the audience and say, he's cheap, folks. He's actually cheap. It's not confidence. He's very confident in his picks. He's just cheap.
I'm the Jack Benny of horse racing radio.
Exactly. Well, I went 3-6-5-10, and I agree about Youth Gone Wild. You know, this is one of those irksome horses that drive pick six players crazy, because you say, oh, this horse is 0-for-22, it's not going to be today. Well, sometimes it is today. I mean, he certainly has run plenty of races, 0-for-22, yeah. He's run plenty of races that have been good enough. So I think I'm using all 4, 3-6 as A's, 5-10 as B's. And that has taken us to the finish line. Seth, we're off for vacation next week, our mid-season respite. And when we're together, when's our first Loose on the Lead, by the way?
Well, we kick off actually
on the 7th?
Sunday before the meet starts. But,
the 7th.
Yeah, whatever that is. So
You can either
come in.
You can either come in or wait until the first week of the meet.
How can I not come in for the big season preview?
Okay. All right. You're in.
Well, unless we're on vacation in someplace really fun and nice, and I don't want to come in.
Wait, you don't plan yet? You don't know where you're going?
We don't, actually. Tina wants to stay fairly close. We're probably going to have a couple of overnights.
Staycation.
Sort of. Lake Placid, maybe an overnight, maybe a Montreal night, maybe. I mean, if you would buy a new house in Maine already, let's go. We don't have a place in Maine, thanks to you.
I VRBO'd a couple weeks ago. I can give you a good recommendation.
I don't want a recommendation. I want a new cottage. Get at it. Let's go. We're America's guests. We're not supposed to have to. Come on. You're killing me. Seth Merrow, everybody. He's the best sport there is because he puts up with me. I want to thank Seth Merrow and whoever else was on today. What else did we do? Pete and we, Sid. Pete and Sid. And what else did we have, Deja? Deja's on the board. We took the Carlisle Bell, which was a lot of fun. Anyway, I'll have the picks up shortly. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Frank Miramonte!